Your noontime look at the financial world. What's trending in Chicago business? The midday numbers. John has the Wintrust Business Lunch now. Money, money,
money, money. And now, here's what we're covering on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Thatcher Oaks Commercial Awnings, covering Chicagoland businesses for 40 years. I even like the morning sun. At 12:08, John Williams here, and we'll start with Elise Glink from Best Money Moves, and we'll talk about where are some of the best places to start a small business. 20% of the small businesses, they say, fail. What are the challenges? What are the opportunities? Man, lovely day. Just turned over my shoulder here, 18 stories up downtown Chicago, looking at the blue skies, the blue lake, the green river. It's a lovely day in Chicago. Elise Glink joins us now, as she always does on Mondays. She is the financial journalist and the CEO of Best Money Moves. You find her stuff at thinkglink.com. Hi, Elise. Welcome back.
Hey, John. Oh, good. How are you?
Yeah. How'd you have a good weekend?
I was busy. I'm getting ready for Passover.
I was. So what does that mean? What does getting ready for Passover entail?
Well, family has come in. There's a lot of family gatherings. We've been getting together, which has been a lot of fun. Nice to see my nieces and my cousins. And tonight we're going to do a Seder. And so everybody's been cooking.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd get to the food there eventually. We spent a lot of time over the weekend just moving dirt and plants and kind of enjoying the yard, you know, now that the landscaping is coming in and the grass is growing.
God, it's so green in our backyard from all the rain that we've had over the last couple of weeks that it's just lovely. It reminds me of the color of Ireland, right? When you go to Ireland and everything's green because it rains all the time.
It's so true. And we've actually had a pretty good early season so far. We planted some vines along a trellis last fall, so this is my first chance to cheer them on, and I check them about every 4 hours. I go, it's grown another inch, it grew another inch, and then I'm always training them around the metal scaffolding to get them to grow just right. I'm obsessing a little bit about it.
Well, it sounds lovely. We went and bought at Costco yesterday, they had the hibiscus trees, the ones that the branches are kind of woven together like in a braid. And I was very excited to see them, and I can't wait to get them out into the sunshine this week.
Small Business Week is coming up, is that right?
Yeah, it's coming up this month, and it was nice. We saw some news around the best cities that you may want to go to. Wallet Hub released its report when they look at this. And, you know, one thing to think about small businesses that I think people forget is, first of all, this country is built on the back of small business owners. Most people work for a small business. And by small, we define as typically fewer than 10 employees.
Wow.
And that just employs a whole lot of people.
More people work for a small business than not.
Yeah, they do. And so we think about big business and we think about Walmart employing 2 million people, or we think about Google employing over 100,000 people. But at the end of the day, it's the mom and pop small business owner that is really helping this country grow. And we've seen, in fact, female small business owners really grow in tremendous numbers since the pandemic. I think there were a couple of years there where over 4 million women were starting small businesses, which is really cool to see. One thing that's sort of interesting to look at this top 20 small cities to start a business is just how many of them are in Utah. Cedar City, Utah, number one. St. George, number two. Washington, Utah, number four. Lehi, Utah, number eight. That's four. And then Eagle Mountain, Midvale, American Fork, and Springville. All of those are in Utah, and all of them are at Wallet Hub's top cities to start a business.
What's going on in Utah?
You know, I got to say, I think it's a combination of really smart young people moving in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. These cities are surrounding some bigger cities where people have maybe been priced out, but they can work remotely. So you're seeing an increase of tech, kind of a tech hub. St. George is interesting because St. George is a place where many thousands of people from California crossed right over the border. They moved to St. George. They've got great weather. There's a big retiree population, but you also have a university. And so I think it's a combination of education technology and tax favorable tax status.
Well, that's interesting, and that's probably no small consideration, but I also imagined it was just access to money. It would seem to me like Utah, Idaho, parts of Montana have been magnets for wealth too, right?
Yeah, they have been. We've seen, I mean, just think about Bozeman, the price of property has gone up significantly. A lot of wealthy people are going there. And in fact, Bozeman has the highest number of startups per 100,000 residents, 8.5 times higher than Galesburg, Illinois, which is the city with the lowest number of startups per 100,000 people.
By the way, I'm looking at the list now that you mention it. So you're right. It's the top 20 small cities to start a business. Florida is in there heavily too, but it's Utah, Florida, North Carolina, Utah, Florida, Idaho, Montana, Utah, Florida, Utah, Montana, Florida, Florida, Utah, Florida. Nothing in the Midwest. Nary an Illinois town in there. Not even close.
And nothing in the Northeast either, which is sort of interesting. I think also you've got to look at recreation. Young people are looking for real balance. And so during the pandemic, a lot of them fled to the mountain region. And then Florida, of course, is just Florida. Sunshine.
Mm. Well, I guess that makes it a place you'd want to live, but that doesn't necessarily to me mean it's going to be a great place to start a small business. But I guess if you've got a young population of people moving into those areas, they're going to need goods and services, right?
Yeah, I think that's right, John. And I think that these areas in Utah and Florida are growing dramatically. I'm a little less, I just sort of wonder about Idaho, but, you know, a couple of the places that they talk about are actually faster growing as well. So you're seeing a population increase. Again, you're seeing housing that's getting built out there. Florida, of course, Sarasota has just been on fire for a while. Bradenton, you know, those two places in Florida, Winter Park.
Right.
You hear about those all the time. But I looked at this list and I just went, wow, Utah, place to be if you want to start a business.
Who knew? It's 1218 on WGN. We're talking to Elise Glink from Think Glink Media. She's also got a few things to say about credit cards, credit card fees. That's coming up. Elise Glink joins us Mondays to talk often about real estate, but other topics as well. Credit cards on your mind today, Elise?
So I saw this story from LendingTree. They did a survey wondering how many people would pay $1,000 for an annual credit card fee. Would you do that, John?
No. Well, I don't want to. What are my options?
Well, it's sort of interesting. There are a lot of people who are paying fees for credit cards, and I think they were trying to determine what would be a fee that you would be willing to pay and what were the kinds of perks that you would have to get to be able to get it. Now, I often will see American Express advertising their special travel, you know, place that you can call, or you get special access to tickets. You know,
right.
That's another one.
Oh,
cash
yeah, first in line for tickets, too, is an advantage for some credit cards.
Oh, absolutely, especially if you're a Taylor Swift
fan,
right?
Yeah.
But there's also other things, you know, you get cash back, and there's some cards that give you 2% cash back, some 1%, some 3% on gas, but 1% there are, you know, there's lots of different things. And then, of course, there's the affinity cards like airline mileage cards. And when you look at, you know, American, United, Delta, you could pay nothing and still get some points. You could pay $95 a year. Or you could pay a lot more than that and get access to their special lounges. So I think that LendingTree was trying to figure out how much people would pay. And the surprising thing is that 6 million cardholders would consider paying a $1,000 fee. And of those, Gen Z seems to be the most likely, followed very quickly by millennials, to pay those kinds of fees and think that they're worth it.
If I'm getting... What? I mean, so I'm just thinking of what, I don't go to concerts, right? So what do I'm trying to imagine what the service is that I'm going to get that would warrant a $1,000 upcharge for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's hard to imagine what that would be worth it for me. I suppose, now there was a time when it was just the fact that you had a Plum card. Do you remember the Plum cards, John? They were purple.
No.
They came out from American Express. They kind of quickly faded. The Chase Sapphire card, you pay something for that. I think it's $200 or $300 a year. People like that card a lot.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people are unhappy with what they have to pay. They don't think that the whatever they get, they don't actually think, most people think, that it's worthwhile. And so you end up getting unhappy with the cards that you have, and you're looking for new ones.
Well, I suppose, I was talking to my sister one time, and she said she pays for everything, like her mortgage payment and gas and groceries. Everything she uses is a credit card. Then she pays off her credit card, and she builds up a ton of points. Now, if for $1,000 you doubled my points, say, and I'm running all of my income through that credit card, then I'd probably get it back. You see what I'm saying? I mean, then it would be worth it. I have a credit card that I never use, and I went online the other day just to check on it and realized I was paying $10 a month for keeping that card. That was the service charge. And it's a really good card that I think I should keep because I'd like to have that credit available. It didn't even dawn on me, though, that I'm paying for it every month.
Well, you might want to call them up, and this is a little trick that I don't think enough people realize, that most of these cards have free versions where you still get the points or something back, like cash back, but you may not get as much as if you're paying for it. But if you're not using it, you should call them up and just say, hey, send me to the you want to keep me department, whatever they call that, and ask them what they can do for you if you don't want to pay that much of a fee anymore. And I think you might be surprised that you can kind of trend down this card or move it to a different card, keep the same number, as a matter of fact, but not pay that fee. I pay a fee for one of my airline mileage cards because I travel so much on that airline that having the extra points allows me to change my ticket at the last minute without paying an extra fee. And I find that I do that enough with my business travel that makes sense for me. But Sam, my husband, says that the one card he likes is cash back because with cash, you can do anything you want to do. And I think people don't really examine the cards that they have, what they use them for. And before you start canceling cards, which could and probably will impact your credit score, think carefully about what your longest card is that you've had the longest, how much available credit you have on that card and other cards, and really think about whether you can charge just a little bit to keep them active every year, but not necessarily put all your money into any one card that's an expensive card.
One last thing, Elise, just real quick. Interest rates on mortgages, what are you hearing? What's the hot topic in real estate right now?
Oh, my gosh. Everybody, excuse me, John, everybody went crazy last week, the bond traders, when the Fed said that inflation wasn't coming down and interest rates shot up. And so the average for a fixed rate loan today, 30-year, if you've got great credit, 7.4%, 15-year, 7.1%.
Wow.
But if you've got the average credit score of 700, you're paying just about 8% for that loan. And that is really high.
I did not realize it was that high. Even on a 15-year with good credit, it's still over 7.
Yeah, it's 7.167 is if you want to take that out a few more digits. I think people are starting to decide that they're not going to wait, though, anymore. They're not expecting interest rates to come down that quickly. And remember, even if you get a higher interest rate now, you're not stuck with it for life. You can always refinance when interest rates go down.
Yeah. Good advice, as always. All right, Elise Glink, thinklink.com. Always nice to talk to you. Thank you, Elise.
You're welcome, John.
John Schaefer joins us now, the COO of Bright Farms. Welcome back to the show. Actually, I think this is the first time you've visited with us, right, John? How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. You guys are opening up a new... Well, first of all, I think you should tell us what Bright Farms is. What do you all do, John?
Sure. Bright Farms is a national leader in the booming indoor farming industry, transforming how produce is grown and delivered with its expanded network of high-tech, sustainable hydroponic farms. Our mission at Bright Farms is to give more consumers access to the freshest, tastiest, most responsibly grown greens available We do this for the health of the people and the health of our planet.
Mm. And when I think of a greenhouse, I don't think of food, but you don't grow flowers in hosta, you grow groceries?
We do, yes. In our greenhouse, we grow a variety of fresh lettuce options, from classic greens to country mixes to even salad kits that we put into local grocery stores in the Chicago metro area, such as Mariano's Fresh Market, Walmart, Roundy's, and more to come.
Oh, really? I love those salad kits. I buy them all the time. You are one of the options there at the store?
Yep, absolutely. We have 4 kits available at each of the stores.
What? Just humor me for a moment. What are the kits that you all make that are available?
Yeah, so we do a Mediterranean kit and a new Southwest Chipotle kit. And then we also do a bacon ranch and a chickpea Caesar kit. So it's a nice variety of consumers to choose from.
But why choose to garden indoors? Why not just outdoors? I mean, you need rain and sunshine. That's outdoors.
Well, you're right. However, you know, we look at it differently because right now, field-grown crops, you have to deal with the weather. You can't control the weather. So you can't predict whether you have rain, whether you have drought, whether you have extreme weather conditions. For us, we grow our greens in bright, sunny greenhouses. So we start with seeds, plant them in a soilless medium where they can soak up nutrient-rich water that gives them everything needed to grow. We don't have to worry about pesticides because we carefully control our inputs. So we also use less water, less land than traditional farmers. So what you see is our greens are able to be delivered to stores in usually about 24 hours after harvest. In comparison to field grown, most of that's done on the West Coast. It takes about 7 to 10 days to get washed, to get processed, to sit on a truck, and then eventually get to the consumer. Where ours, since it's there faster, means that you get greens that are fresher, crunchier, and last longer in the consumer's fridges.
Mm. So you're in Rochelle, you're opening up a new greenhouse in Yorkville, and you're hiring for that greenhouse, right?
We are, yes. We are opening up in July, and right now we're looking for about 100 full-time employees to work at that location.
What would maybe it's obvious, but tell me, what does a greenhouse worker do? What kind of jobs are those?
Yeah, well, surprisingly, a lot of our jobs actually are machine operators, maintenance techs, and warehouse associates. Our growing, these high-tech greenhouses we have, are essentially automated growing. So you don't need to have necessarily a green thumb. What you need to do is be able to be passionate about the mission of the company and come in. And there's plenty of jobs for local community for people that are looking for entry-level jobs, even up to salary leadership positions at this location.
But, well, I was about to say, but it's only probably a seasonal work because you can't grow groceries all year long, but maybe indoors you can, huh?
Yeah, that's the benefit to us. So we actually offer year-round ag employment, which is unusual based on the typical ag sector seasonal. Because we're in a greenhouse, we actually operate 24/7, 365 days a year. So it's someone that can get steady employment throughout the year growing fresh leafy greens.
So what is working like for you then? What do you offer to employees?
Sure. So for our employees, we offer a living wage because we think it's important for employees to be able to live where they actually work. And we also offer competitive benefits starting on day one of employment, which include medical, dental, vision, 401k, and additional benefits that you can find on our website.
In Yorkville are these new jobs. Whereabouts in Yorkville are you? I'm familiar with that area. I used to live out that way.
Yep. So we're Yorkville. We're on Corneille's Road. If you head down again to Corneille's Road, right where it connects into Elder Main Road.
Got it. And how big is this? I mean, I would imagine it would need to be massive to justify the cost and to actually come up with a product that you can get into enough stores.
Yeah, so we actually have about 150 acres of land. The first phase of it that we just started that opens up in July is 8 acres under greenhouse and about 120,000 square feet of a warehouse processing facility. That's the first phase that opens in July, but then ultimately we put 4 more phases on that property to fill it up.
What do you grow then? You mentioned lettuces. Is it leafy greens? You don't grow carrots in there, do you?
Nope, it's 100% leafy greens. So it's a variety of green and red leaf. You're looking at other things like romaine or butter varieties, but all leafy greens.
And then is the salad kits the main revenue stream for what you all are doing?
Salad kits are growing quite a bit. We see them month over month, year over year, growing significantly. Consumers want that easy to grab and go item, not having to buy dressing and everything else you can have for lunch or for dinner. But our actually most popular item is our Sunny Crunch, which is a basic green leaf, which has great taste and great crunch.
Are you selling to restaurants then, or selling that in grocery stores and just consumers are buying them straight up?
Yes, primarily restaurants where consumers are buying straight up. We do have food service. It's a very small part of our business that we're looking to grow using partners like UNFI or US Foods, et cetera, to kind of go out into the retail restaurant establishments. But right now, we're mainly to consumers.
This sounds like a more expensive way to grow food, though. Is your food more expensive than at the store?
No, if you look at it, you might see a slightly larger amount than what a field-grown product is. But if you look at it, typically that field-grown product in a bag won't last you as long. So most consumers typically will pull out stuff that doesn't look good or throw it away early. Ours lasts in the fridge longer. So what you see is consumers actually use our entire batch of product that comes in that package. So ultimately what they're paying for, they can actually use compared to what they buy at a slightly cheaper price. A lot of that's discarded and waste.
If you're growing in January and February, you say you do it all year long. You must have a heck of a heating bill in the wintertime, huh?
No, it's actually not bad. You'd be surprised. The greenhouse actually captures the power of the sun. And you'd be surprised how much radiation heat that sun produces that allows us to have the greenhouse run without having to have extra heat. We do have extra heat available, obviously, if we need it when it gets extremely cold in the Chicago area. But for the most part, the sun helps heat the space up to right to the temperature that the leaves need.
So you are taking applications this month, and the work begins, what, in June, do I read correctly?
Yeah, so near the end of June, July, we want to have the majority, if not all, of the employees hired. Taking applications, you go to join.brightfarms.com. It allows you to look at all the opportunities that we have available and then post for a job.
Join.brightfarms.com. Brightfarms.com, obviously, is the website. And then are you all going to expand? Would you open up other greenhouses, or would you expand the products that you're growing?
Yeah, so we do. We have other greenhouses opening this year in Texas and also in Georgia. We will eventually expand the Yorkville site. As I said, we start with phase one. We'll have the other phases as demand grows in that market. And then we are also looking at adding more product categories into the mix, thinking about other kits coming out. We offer spinach and some other varieties that we looked at to get to that site eventually to grow.
Is there a trend for this kind of food? That is, are people either health conscious or somehow environmentally conscious, and that will propel you guys, or are your consumers indifferent to that?
Well, what we really see consumers want is consumers want a product that lasts in their fridge. They want something that tastes great, looks good, and doesn't spoil quickly. And so that's where our products really have the advantage over everyone else. And so what we're seeing is customers want that for that reason.
Yeah.
What we're seeing today, if I look at a produce department, typically you see field grown down kind of year over year. You see organic down year over year, but you see indoor grown is actually growing significantly. Right now, it's only 2% of the total kind of leafy green space across the entire country. We're expecting it to be about 25% of the space in about 10 years.
Well, I think we've all had that experience where you open up that tub of nice lettuce or spinach, and it's a little soft and smelly in there, and you go, well, I was more ambitious with my consumption when I bought this stuff than I actually turned out to be. So if you have a longer shelf life, I suppose that gives you an advantage. What's the name on the label then? What am I looking for in the stores, John?
You're looking for Bright Farms. The bright, sunny logo pretty much stands out on the shelf pretty quickly against our competition. And certainly, in most cases, you'll see that product last even beyond what we post as the Best Buy date on the package.
John Schaefer is the COO of Bright Farms. Brightfarms.com is the website. And the shortcut, John, one more time for the job applications is what?
It's join.brightfarms.com.
John Schaefer, COO over there. Nice to talk to you today, John. Good luck.
Same to you. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
So, Chicago's best stair climb tradition returns to iconic Soldier Field. Join WGN Radio at the Fight for Air Climb, presented by United Healthcare. This is going to be Sunday, May 19th. Stair climb 2,000 stairs at your own pace to reach new heights and a new you in 2024. Do good, feel great, challenge yourself and others to support clean air, healthy lungs, and help save lives one step at a time. The American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb at Soldier Field. Register today at fightforairclimb.org/WGN. WGN Radio News in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in just Well, let's make it 9 minutes. By the way, just a quick note on the trial. Donald Trump's trial is underway. Jury has been selected. Alternates have been chosen. And as you've been hearing, the opening arguments have been taking place. Key witnesses are both Michael Cohen, the fixer, the former attorney for Donald Trump, as well as David Pecker, who was with the National Enquirer and is the guy behind what prosecutors will describe as checkbook journalism, the catch and kill of negative stories. I'm just reading from a story here that said the lead lawyer for Mr. Trump said President Trump is innocent. President Trump did not commit any crimes. The case centers on the $130,000 hush money payment that Michael Cohen made to porn star Stormy Daniels to buy her silence as the 2016 campaign was winding down. Prosecutors say he was reimbursed by Mr. Trump, and Mr. Trump falsified business records to conceal his conduct. He did that so as to increase his chances of winning the election, and therein lies, they say, the federal crime. Mr. Trump's willingness to go to all of that trouble, right, have Cohen do it and then him pay Cohen and organize this thing, quote, shows just how important it was to Donald Trump to hide the true nature of Cohen's illegal payment to Ms. Daniels and the overall election conspiracy that they had launched. But Donald Trump's lawyer said, I've got a spoiler alert. There's nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy. They put something sinister on this idea as if it were a crime, Mr. Trump's lawyer said, but you will learn that it is not. So that's just a little bit about where the trial is. Pecker has already taken the stand. And we'll probably be back up there tomorrow. He is the principal behind some of those catch and kill stories. And while in a way that is what Michael Cohen did with Stormy Daniels for Donald Trump, that's not the only time that scheme, if you will, took place, prosecutors allege. And that's why the former editor or publisher of the National Enquirer is a key witness in this case. There was also just a couple of things we wanted to mention now that the weather is getting warmer about dining indoors and outdoors in Chicago. I noticed that Tribune the other day had a story. No. Actually, this is from Let Us Entertain You. And they were talking about all of the places in their family of restaurants where you can eat outdoors. And I will include in this, though it is not a Let Us Entertain You restaurant, Big Onion Hospitality Group that runs Fat Poor Tap Works and Woody's Flat has announced the opening of its third Fat Poor Tap Works. This is on Lincoln Avenue in Lincolnwood. It's a 10,000-square-foot facility with outdoor dining and drinking for 300 people. So a new alfresco dining and drinking place in Lincolnwood, part of the Big Onion group called Fat Poor, is opening in Lincolnwood. And the description of that sounds really, really good. The menu for that place, actually, let me just get to that before I go back to Let Us Entertain You, is pretty interesting. They have fat plates. They have sandwiches. They have steaks and brunch and some of the stuff you would expect to find, salads, flatbreads, burgers. They have a maple bacon burger with Swiss cheese, maple glazed bacon, smashed tater tots, a fried egg, mayonnaise, and avocado. Somehow that's a burger. They have the Bergen bacon, which is an iceberg wedge, thick cut cherry wood bacon, blue cheese, red onions, tomatoes. I love that for a salad. And then, as I said, the flatbreads and things like that. And outdoor seating for 300. Let Us Entertain You reminds you that among their family of restaurants, the outdoor dining includes ABBA. The rooftop patio is open for dinner and weekend brunch. They got fire pits up there if it's still cool. And lounge seating at ABBA. Miru, which is right over here at the St. Regis in Chicago. It's right next to our building, just off of Wacker Drive. And on the 11th floor, Kevin and I, about a month ago, went over there and checked this place out. They were having a grand opening, and we were invited. So we went over to the Miru. On the 11th floor, they have a terrace where you can sit outside, eat and drink. It's very spacious. It's really lovely. The views are amazing. And that's MIRU. And that's at the St. Regis Hotel in Chicago. Pizzeria Portofino, when this opened up, was really the ticket downtown. It's right on the river. It's not too far from House of Blues. It's on that side of the river on the north side, just down from Trump Tower a little bit. But right on the river is a place called Pizzeria Portofino. It's a really fun room. It's very loud. It's right on the water. They also have inside dining, of course. And that's called Pizzeria Portofino. And the patio dining there and drinking is really, really nice. They also mentioned Emma, open for patio seating, serving lunch, dinner, and the brunch menu, featuring Mediterranean small plates. Osteria Via Stato is a place that I've been many times and sure have a fond spot in my heart for us. Osteria Via Stato, which actually I don't think is the best outdoor dining view, but evidently they've got some tables outdoors. And then, of course, RJ Grunts and the Let Us Entertain You family is open for patio seating. It's a perfect spot to grab lunch or dinner before or after you go to Lincoln Park Zoo. RJ Grunts is still up and running. They still got good salads, and they're still next to the zoo.